Tamara.
And I'm Rel.
And this is Fearful Friends Podcast. Welcome.
Welcome, 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 everyone.
So last night, what did we do?
We went and saw And That's Why We Drink live in West Palm Beach. The podcast.
I loved it.
It was such a great night.
I'm like still on a high from it.
She might have cried. I didn't see any tears, but she did say 70 times that she was going to cry.
I didn't.
They walked 2 feet away from us. When they walked in, I saw people in staff shirts. And I was like, that looks a lot like M.
Yes.
And then I was like, oh my fucking God, that was M and Christine. And they walked right in front of us.
I know.
God. That was such a good show,
though. It was so good. It was scary and funny. And that's all we can say.
I was very scared. Yes, that is all we can say. We can't really talk about details because we don't want to ruin the story for anyone.
I know. It was so good.
Oh my God, it was so good. If you haven't already, go see one of their live shows.
I wish I could do a second.
Yeah. Wait, I mean, we could have done like West Palm and Miami.
I know.
But fucking work.
I was so late waking up this morning.
I was a little hungover this morning. They had a super cute like signature cocktail menu for the show, and it was like spooky themed. So Tamara's sister and I were drinking like blue drinks essentially, and all my poops are green. And yeah, TMI. I don't care. I know you need to. And they were good, but a lot of sugar. I can't do cocktails anymore. I just can't. I've basically been hungover until about like 3 o'clock when I went to the bar and had another beer. Oh God. But now I feel fine. I'm drinking water though, because I don't want another hangover tomorrow.
That's why I had edibles. Also because it was 4:20.
I have more edibles for and you, by the way.
Thank you. I have a sensitive tummy.
Yes, she has. Our girl's got some GERD.
Yeah, GERD. No
gallbladder.
No gallbladder.
She's all messed up.
Yeah. So.
Tell me what's going on.
Nothing. Just ready to bitch about work.
Tell me.
My boss is on medical leave. That makes me the boss.
Solid.
I hate it.
Solid. Texting me all day asking. Maybe I could just like call your branch and tell them that I was your mom and that there was an emergency, and I feel like that would have worked, so I don't know why we didn't do it.
Because I just feel bad putting someone else in my position.
But they wouldn't feel bad doing it to you.
Yeah, it's just so stressful. I hate being like the manager when someone's angry, like, and I just don't, I have no solutions for these people.
I got you.
And I just don't care, also.
It's the burnout.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm breathing so hard.
Yeah, definitely major burnout.
I feel you.
What about you? Tell me about work.
I have a story.
You already told me the story, but...
But nobody was really listening while I was screaming in the car about it, so I feel like I can tell you it again and get an even better reaction.
Yeah. I have no idea.
You were driving?
I know.
Tamara is driving down I-95, the most dangerous highway in the United States, according to statistics, going 30 miles an hour, dueling it out with a semi-truck about who's going to go first. And then he honks his train horn at her.
I'm a safe driver.
My dad always told me, the people that cause accidents are the ones that go slowest on 95.
I wasn't going the slowest on 95, and it wasn't going 30 miles an hour either.
I was staring at your speedometer, wondering when you were going to speed up.
Well, maybe that's because there was someone going 30 miles an hour in front of me.
There was nobody in front of her.
I'm a safe driver.
She was. Yes.
I'm a safe driver.
I know you are. I believe you. Okay.
So tell me your story.
So the other day, an Instacart shopper came in. Shocker. This is an Instacart shopper hate story. And she brings her child with her, which is pretty common because they think that like we're their babysitters.
It's also not allowed.
It happens all the time. Entire families will come in. Mm-hmm. And like the mom will be the one manning the phone. She's sending her husband off to grab shit. She's got the kids in the shopping cart or out in the store just like running around causing havoc. It happens all the time. Whatever. I understand babysitters are expensive, but like fucking reel them in. I'm not your babysitter and I'm sick of cleaning up messes. Anyways, this is not what this story is about. Because I didn't have to clean this mess up. I just happened to walk past it.
So tell me I'm ready.
So this kid, his mom wasn't paying attention to him, obviously. And he brings in this pet snake to the grocery store. And I don't know. I'm not a snake person, but it kind of looked like a coral head. It was like orange and white and black stripe.
A coral head. You're definitely.
What's it called? A coral snake. Coral snake. I'm sorry. Coral head is a kind of beer, actually. TBBC. Plug. Anyways.
So a child had a snake.
I don't know if it was a coral snake, but I'm just saying it has the same color. It had that orange and white and black. Also, I don't know if coral snakes actually have that color, but I think they do. I'm not a snake scientist. Anyways.
All I know is...
Let's just delete all that and say it was orange and white and black.
Red and black, friend of Jack.
The fuck's Jack?
Red and yellow, kill a fellow. Or is it black and yellow, kill a
fellow?
Where
does orange come in, though?
Orange and yellow. Is orange yellow?
Orange and yellow.
We should Google this because
I'm not doing that. Should I?
We live in Florida, so it's.
One of those, I know like, that common... coral snakes are venomous.
Coral snakes are venomous.
Yes.
I feel like we're Googling this. I didn't
snake
know
colors.
A red and black next I to each other are red and black next to each other is safe because there's two snakes that look exactly alike.
Oh. Oh, the first thing that comes up, to easily identify a coral snake, remember this rhyme. Red touches yellow, kills a fellow. Red touches black, venom lack. Venom lack. That's so stupid. Okay, I'm not going to remember that. But
red and black.
That doesn't look like a coral snake. That doesn't look like what he had. Because the snake that he had was like white and orange and black.
Okay.
I don't think there's any white. Anyways, whatever. It was a pet snake. And this fucking 8-year-old or 7-year-old or whatever comes into the store. And of course, because his mom's not paying attention to him, he's riding around the electric cart. He's letting his snake crawl all over it. The snake crawls inside of the handlebars of the electric cart, you know, where like the buttons are.
Yes.
And he can't get it out. So he drives the thingy up front and he starts like panicking. And he's like up there waiting for his mom to check out. She checks out. She comes over to the electric cart and she starts going fucking banshee on the cart and like rips off the head of the electric cart to get the snake out. Damaging our property.
She like kidding?
Rips off the thing to get this fucking snake out that her son should not have brought into a grocery store in the first place. And meanwhile, like my store walks by and my store manager walks by and this lady is like, ripping the handlebars off of this electric shopping cart. And she's just like, excuse me, like, what are you doing? I'm not leaving here without my snake. And my store manager has no idea what's going on. She explains the whole thing to her. A couple people walk by and they're just like, hey, why don't you just like ride the electric cart into the dairy cooler? Snakes don't like the cold. And I hear this and I'm just like, if you guys bring a fucking snake into my cooler, I swear to God, I will leave.
Oh my God.
This was a whole thing. By the end of it, she had completely like the thing doesn't work. It's still out of service. This happened probably like 2 weeks ago. The cart's still out of service. Its wires are all dangling out of the top of it. She got her fucking snake. But like she damaged public property. Just like what the fuck? Why are you bringing a snake into a grocery store?
Did she even once, like, yell at her child for bringing the snake?
No, this is the same exact child. I'm pretty sure I've talked about it on the pod. And if I haven't, I've talked to you about it in like real life. Just this is the same exact one. He runs around. He has temper tantrums and he knocks over shippers when he gets mad at his mom for not showing him any attention. And like I'll be standing there and he knocks over a shipper of like bag fucking tea where there's like 100 boxes of tea on there. And she goes, hey, pick that up. And he goes, no. And she goes, pick it up. And he goes, no. And she goes, well, get over here. And then they walk away and just fucking leave it there. This, I swear to God, this happens multiple times a week, Tamara. It's the reason I'm not having kids.
Okay.
It's the same people.
You can have children that aren't
demons.
Crazy.
Doubt it.
Okay.
Except for yours. Yours is fine.
No, she's a
demon. And in the show notes, it'll say, Rel screams about another Instacart shopper.
Well, they deserve it.
Sometimes I really do. Anyways.
I can't. A snake in a grocery store.
Okay. I've seen a lot of things, like people bring in their fucking, their dogs, their service animals. I've seen somebody bring a cat. When we worked at Winn-Dixie, we had that guy who used to bring in like a parakeet all the time, had it on his shoulder. Remember that?
No.
Oh my God, you could hear it. He just squawked all throughout the store.
Why don't I remember that?
I don't know.
I remember someone brought in a fox one time.
Aww, it was like, foxes are so cute. Yeah. Was it a little cutie pie? Was he so nice?
He was holding, it was like a baby fox. We thought it was a cat, but it was a fox.
What does the fox say?
And the guy that brought in his dog with a cowboy hat and called it cowboy. Everyone was obsessed
with it. Oh my God, that was a fox?
No, that was a dog.
Oh.
That was a different, I'm talking about a different guy.
I know that guy that you're talking about.
Yeah.
I love his dog. Good. And he had a cowboy hat.
Yep.
That's why he called it cowboy. But not that guy.
No.
Why did we bring up that guy?
just the weird animals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've never seen a snake before. I've never seen someone ballsy enough to bring a snake in. Somebody did bring, like, one of those bats in.
Was it a bat?
Yeah, it was like a bat. It was really cute.
A bat.
Or a flying, squirrel. That's what it is, a sugar glider. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yes, I have seen one of those too.
Oh my God.
She in the grocery store
it,
only.
Wrapping it up in a little blanket. And I was just like, so cute.
Very weird.
And it's a weird thing to shop with, but I bet they just like feed them free strawberries.
Free strawberries.
Quote unquote free strawberries that they don't have to pay for because they think they're samples.
And free grapes and free blueberries. Like free bananas.
Free everything. If you eat it before you get to the register, it must be free, right?
Yeah.
Just mm-hmm. like all the kombucha. I find empty cans all over the store. Not going to get into it. It's called theft, people. It's called theft. I will gladly give you something to sample. But when it's not accounted for, it's called theft. And that's all I'll say.
That's all she'll say. So are you ready for your story?
Are we ready to get into this super bummer?
Yes. Yes, I need some other bummer in my life.
It's a super bummer.
Is it a long one?
It's kind of long. It's kind of long. It's pretty long. Good. I'm scrolling a lot.
I'm ready.
Oh, boy.
I'm so excited. Tell me what it is.
Okay, well, you know how I write my notes out. They're like a fucking story because I'm really bad at paraphrasing things. So, in the remote jungles, can you guess it?
No.
In the remote jungles of Guyana on November 18th.
Yes.
In 1978. Do you know it?
It's, you don't know it. I do. It's the cult.
Oh! What's it called?
Jonestown.
Yes, girl.
Woo!
It's not cheer. 900 people died.
Okay. Yeah, you're right.
Over 900 Americans would die in what became internationally infamous as the Jonestown Massacre. I'm going to just say, like, before I start all my notes, like, this was, like, one of the first, like, cults that ever really, like, sparked my fascination with like cults, and I know that there was like Heaven's Gate and all that other stuff, but like this one is just like, I don't know why, it's just like so unbelievable to me that this was able to get as far as it did, and then to end the way that it did, and like cults like this are still out there, they just mm-hmm. haven't ended with such like a catastrophic end yet, you know?
Yes,
like it's fucking scary. So this whole story begins with a dude named Jim Jones. Super cool name. But that's all I'll say about. That's the only compliment he gets. That and his cool aviator sunglasses.
The Jim Jones. I don't think that's a cool name.
I don't know. It's got a ring to it.
He sounds like an old man.
I mean, he was an old man at one point when he was old. He became one eventually. Yeah. Unfortunately, he was born in my home state of Indiana.
Okay.
We share the same roots. And even at a young age, he had a fascination with religion and attended church regularly. The older he got, the more that he was like developing his charisma and became sort of like a performer type and became like more confident. And a lot of his classmates would say that he was like born to be a preacher. He just like had that voice where he like got up on stage and he fucking bellowed. It's like I don't know, like the cliched, like they get up on the stage and they do these like, I don't know. I don't know.
Sermon.
Yes.
It just captivates everyone.
And then like the people just get up and start like waving their hands and shit like that. Like he had what it takes.
I don't know. I'd be pretty offended if someone said I was born to be a preacher.
That's what he wanted, man. I mean, I would also be offended if somebody said that. But like, I think preachers and like certain like lifestyles, that was something to be like, you're like a fucking celebrity. Like in that time in Indiana, especially, like he was going through like this Pentecostal church, which was just like all about like hoting and hollering. I was like a big deal.
Speaking in tongues.
Basically, yeah. So he went to university in Indiana, and then after he graduated, he joined the ministry. He became a student pastor for a local Methodist church. He like tried out a whole bunch of different religions and a whole bunch of different churches, but none of them really like fit his fancy. They weren't ticking off any of his boxes. So after he tried a couple of them out, he decided to start his own religious organization that better aligned with like his ideals, socially, politically, personally, whatever. And like later on, we find out this is like a super, he's a very like political, ideological man. It's not just about the religion. So in 1954, the People's Temple of the Disciples of Christ.
Too many words.
Too many fucking words. Yeah. We refer to them now as the People's Temple.
Okay.
Yeah. Which even that's like, I just call them the peoples. Yeah. The peeps. I won't say that.
The peeps temp.
They were formed. So at that time in the 1950s, and especially in Indiana, I mean, I feel like even, I don't know, even now. Hell, even now in Florida, it's like, the fuck is going on? But back then in Indiana, like, segregation was still a thing. They were working on, like, integrating people into society, but it was, like, still too slow for him. And racism was still rampant. And in the beginning of this whole thing, he had a really wholesome vision of how he wanted the world to be. His message was that he wanted to overcome the evils of racism and poverty and have a fully integrated congregation. Where race didn't matter, capitalism would be a thing of the past, and everyone could live peacefully in a just society.
Was that really his intent, or was he?
I think that he was saying that was his intent, but he was, like, super into Marxism and, like, communism and socialism and stuff like that. And he just, like, I don't know. He didn't want to fucking pay for anything. Okay. He was a fucking con man. Okay. At the end of the day, like, he just, I don't know. He's gross. Like, I'll list them in the show notes, but there's so many, like, documentaries and, like, different articles that I've, like, pulled all this shit out from. But, like, he's gross. And he's so much more fucked up than I'm even gonna get into, because this would be like a six-parter. No. But yeah, I'm just gonna, like, this is like the skiddly do of it all. Okay. This is like the summary, I guess. So yeah, that sounds like a pretty, like, sweet deal if that's what it actually was. His ideology, like, quickly attracted an enthusiastic following, and his church expanded. And in 1965, he moved his congregation to California, in, like, the San Francisco area. A lot more progressive. Mm-hmm. And basically, I think he moved them there because they said that it was, like, one of the top 10 places that you want to go if there's a nuclear fallout. He always had this, like, paranoia that there was going to be a nuclear holocaust coming. So he wanted to move his congregation where they thought it was, like, safe. He had that from the beginning.
Okay.
So what happens later isn't really a surprise to anyone, because he always had this in the back of his head that, like, the apocalypse is coming. Okay. In 1965, yeah, he moves to California. And this is where the sinister side of the church becomes more apparent to some people. He started referring to himself as a reincarnation of Christ and Buddha, and was developing a dangerous messiah complex all the while. He would often practice faith healing, where in exchange for money, of course. Yeah, you know what that is. I'm gonna pull this demon out of your body, and from now on, you'll be perfectly healed. So he would, like, literally charge people money and tell them that he could literally pull cancer out of their bodies. But what he would actually do is, like, use magician flame and rotten chicken. And he would, like, you know, flick the flame and be like, oh, I just pulled this cancer right out of your body. But it's just, like, a bunch of cut up rotten chicken. And that's how he would get new congregants to follow. It's like, oh, my God, this man can fucking walk in water. He can heal me. He can do whatever. And that's how he would get new people. It was, and, like, I was just watching this documentary the other day. He was, like, literally staging some of his, like, current members in the crowd of, you know, potential newcomers with, like, spine disorders or, like, arthritis, where he would be like, this lady would be in the crowd like, I've never been able to open up my hand because of my arthritis. And he would be like, oh really, I point at you right now, open up your hand right now. And she'd be like, oh, my hand is open. Wow. And then people would fucking lose their shit. Like, it was the real deal. Really upsetting.
Wow. Oh my God.
yeah, that's all I would take. And it's just like, when you're in a place, when you're just like, when you're lonely, you're looking for something, anything to cling on to or believe in, like, that's your man, you know. He promises you everything. He began then expecting his followers to, like with many other cults, turn over all of your personal wealth. A man needs his money. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they worked long, unpaid hours for the church. He even began blackmailing some members. He would have them sign, just like I think we see with, like, Scientology and stuff like that. They would have them sign blank pieces of paper that they could basically, like, transpose anything on there. Like, I murdered someone. And then, like, if you, like, wanted to leave the cult, they could just, like, put something on the piece of paper. And you signed it. And this mm-hmm. is blackmail. They would force people to sign blank pieces of paper. They would force parents to sign false documents saying that they had molested their children. If they ever, like, wanted to leave the congregation, he would, like, send those out to the authorities. Many members began to be completely cut off from their families outside the church and were forced to raise their children within the community. And even with all that happening, their numbers continued to grow because he's this charismatic dude. And he's got all this success in politics at the time, because this is a white man and segregation is still a thing. He's super progressive. He's bringing on all these African-American people who want nothing more than a just society and equal rights and all this other stuff. He had members of the Black Panthers backing him. He had politicians backing him. I mean, people trusted him because he had mainstream characters behind him.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
It's scary. It's really scary because it's like, it's happening. It still happens.
Yeah. It's so scary.
Yeah. Truly. I lost my place. So, yeah, he attracted more and more African Americans that were looking for refuge from the racial oppression that they were facing on a daily basis. But the more powerful that he got, obviously, the more cracks started to appear in this perfect society that he had. A few of his high-ranking members, I think he said it was like 8 members of his, like, upper tier, decided to, like, defect. They were just like, we want out. This isn't going to where they want. There was a lot of abuse going on. Like, he would literally just, like, if you did something he didn't like, or if you would talk to anybody outside the church, he would literally bring you up in front of the congregation and have other members beat the shit out of you until you were bloody. It was just like, it's a whole thing. There's audio footage of all of it.
Oh, God.
Where he is cackling in the background saying, I think at one point I was listening to one and he said something about he had a white and a black there, but he lost the white because the white turned blue. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So it was pretty fucked up.
Oh, my God.
For someone who's like all about social justice. So the high ranking members that decided to defect, they began to talk to the media and stuff like that about the cult, which cults at the time were starting to come to light. People are starting to open their eyes to what's going on, because I'm not sure if like Manson was around then. I'm not really sure of like the time of all of that, but it was definitely, people were starting to open their eyes mm-hmm. to it. The media started to turn on the People's Temple. And while they were, Jones was already on the hunt for a secluded safe space to move his congregation because of, you know, his paranoia about the fucking nuclear holocaust. And he promised them a paradise. So in 1974, he bought a patch of land, a pretty shitty patch of land in Guyana. It was unfertile. You couldn't fucking grow anything on it. It was in the middle of the jungle. He bought a patch of land. And he sent like 500 of his followers over. At this time, I think his congregation was at like 20,000 across the country. He had like multiple churches. Okay. Yeah, so he sent 500 of his followers to begin construction in Guyana. So after 3 years of battling an oppressive tropical environment with limited resources, we're talking like they're miles away from water in the fucking jungle. I get hot walking out to my car.
I know, right?
I can't be outside for more than 5 minutes without having a fire ant crawl up my fucking leg. So I'm not about it.
I mean, like, I have to get 2 drinks at Starbucks. So
it's just like you're in a jungle. You have no air conditioning. You have no water. And you're forced to work 18 hours a day constructing, farming, whatever you have to do, with absolutely no reward. You're not getting paid. You're barely eating. Yeah. Because there was no food. Because he didn't have any money. And they couldn't grow any food.
He didn't have any money.
He had the money that, like, people had, like, paid him, like, from the cult in the States. But, like, once everything was going on and, like, he ended up, like, moving people over there, he had no money to sustain the population.
Okay, my God.
So, with all that, Jonestown was born, obviously, named after the fucking man himself. And,
Why have I never connected that?
Jonestown and Jim Jones?
Yeah. Why am I just...
I'm so sorry.
It is all your fault.
It's pretty obvious.
To be fair, they were located right next to a town called Georgetown. It just always seemed weird to me. It's like Guyana,
mm-hmm.
Jonestown.
The reason that they picked that spot in Guyana is I think it's like one of the few areas in South America that actually is like an English-speaking area close to Georgetown. So they were able to like go out for supplies if they needed to. There was a bank there and all that other stuff. So like they could be off the grid without really being off the grid.
Okay.
So plus he's like super egotistical. So of course, name it after your fucking self.
It's like the real obvious things that I just don't get.
Yeah. You're not going to name it Fred Town. Nobody cares about Fred. So the mass migration now began. Over 100 members. I'm sorry, not 100. 1,000.
Okay.
I can't read.
The mass migration of 100 people.
Over 1,000. Well, yeah. I don't know if it's over 1,000. About 1,000 members. The numbers are really, really hard to like figure out on this whole thing. I swear to God, every single website I went to different. Had different fucking yeah. numbers because people consider different like levels of membership a different. I don't know. I'm going to say around 1,000 members left their lives behind in the United States to come and join the community in Guyana. But Jonestown was definitely not the paradise that he had advertised it to be. The temple's people's fucking the people's temple. What? The temple? The people's? The people's. They worked long. They worked long, hard days in the fields. They were subjected to harsh punishments if they ever questioned their leader's authority. Their passports and medications were confiscated upon arrival to the place. So, like, he forced them to get passports to come to Guyana. He was like, we gotta go. This is it. We can't live in this country anymore. It's too oppressive. Get passports. And then the second that they got there, he's like, give me your passports. Because you have to stay here. And
just hooks them and traps them.
Yeah, basically. It's really scary. And they just, I mean, they had no choice but to go along with it because they saw what happened to people that dissented. They got the beat the shit out of. Yeah. So, and not only that, but like you got like the tropical shit. Like there's fucking mosquitoes. There's diseases. There's, you got like, what is foot, crotch rot, foot rot?
Trench it's, foot?
Oh, wet. Wet, gross jungle. Everything's so wet. You get a cut on your arm. You're gonna have to chop that arm off, probably. I don't know if anybody did.
Plus, it's humid.
It's humid. They said that you could literally cut the air with a knife. It was so thick and humid, and it was hot. And when it rained, it got even hotter. And like we know, like we live in South Florida, but like the jungle is a whole different beast. The South American jungle? Fuck that. And much like, sorry, that was weird. Much like other cults, members were encouraged to inform on one another. Tattletale, basically. If anybody was doing anything wrong, they would have to go to Jim Jones or whoever the higher tiered leaders were and just like tell on other people. Their letters were and phone calls to the outside world were censored. Because of Guyana's lax shipping laws at the time, it made it super easy for the commune to gain access to drugs and weapons, both of which Jones would make use of. He placed armed guards all around the compound and began using hard drugs. I couldn't really, like, find anything to specify what hard drugs he was using, but from the way he talks, I'm gonna assume fucking speed, because he's, like, all over the place. Like, there's one point where he's talking about, like, the vat of, like, poison. He's like, the vat. And I'm just like, calm down. Oh my God. It freaked me out. So
how is that the guy they're following?
I know. It's just, it's the power, man. I don't know. Like, you gotta watch this documentary. I think it's called like Paradise Lost or something like that on Hulu. It was like, I had anxiety the whole fucking time I was watching because the way he talks, like, I don't think I could ever follow him just because, like, his voice gives me fucking anxiety. Like, he's always yelling all the time. And he's talking so fast. And he's always yelling at people. That's not to say. I mean, like, I don't know. What? Anyways, whatever. We'll get to it. Oh, my goodness. Anyways, he began using hard drugs, which further destabilized his mental and physical health. And in his increasing paranoia, he became convinced that the government and the media were out to destroy him. And he began what he referred to as white knights. Have you heard of that?
No.
So
I mean, I probably have. I just forgot it.
White knights are like basically suicide drills. So okay. Yes. At the drop of a hat, at any point, sirens would go off. Armed guards would come out. They would wake up all the residents. You would have to meet in the pavilion and basically start preparations for your suicide. And this could happen like anytime. They were ready at the drop of a hat to do this. It's just such a bummer. He truly had convinced most of them that their death would be a revolutionary act and that it would be far more freeing than having to live by society's oppressive rules. It's just like, it's just insane because, like, in the beginning, you know, oh, I'm sorry. They were, you know, doing these suicide drills and a couple, they were just like, what is this? Okay, I guess we'll just go along with it. And then the more and more he kept doing it, the more they got comfortable with the idea with that it's just a drill. Mm-hmm. We live every yeah. time. Yeah, he tells us there's poison in the wine, but it's just a drill. It's every time you have a fucking fire drill at work. It's just a drill until it's not. And then you drink the Kool-Aid. Many families in the United States were having trouble reaching their loved ones who had dropped everything to follow their leader. And they were understandably growing more and more concerned and began asking for help from the U.S. government to try and figure out exactly what was going on in Jonestown. Because it was like, you know, armed guards. Nobody knew what was going on. All their letters and calls were being censored. Nobody knew what the fuck was going on. There were several rumors flying around that people were being held against their will at the compound, which they were because mm-hmm. their passports were gone. They couldn't fucking go anywhere. And where are you going to go? In the jungle? Like, and run to where? So after urging from the public, Leo Ryan, a U.S. representative from California, along with a handful of reporters, photographers, and a few concerned relatives, made their way to the compound to investigate. Jones had gotten word about the visit and basically had one objective: get them out of Jonestown as soon as possible by making them think everything is fine. On November 17th, 1978, the day before the massacre, the People's Temple members put on their best dog and pony show. They were forced to talk about how wonderful and fulfilling their lives become since migrating to the compound. They even hosted a dinner and an evening of entertainment for the politician and his group. I mean, like, you watch the videos of these people being interviewed and they're like, they're convincing. They're like,
so they were buying it.
Yeah. So the congressman actually, like, stood up at the end of it and gave a speech on the end of the first night and was just like, you know, I've gotten a lot of complaints about this compound and what's going on here, but as far as I can see, these people, this is the best thing that's ever happened to them. And they said the crowd cheered in a way that was almost too much of a cheer. Like it was like rehearsed or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It all seemed too good to be true. And then towards the end of the night, a note was slipped to like one of the either journalists or photographers for the news crew. It was from two of the members from Jonestown. And the note basically just said, please help us get out of Jonestown.
Oh, so, that's so scary.
I know. Oh. And that's like all it said.
How freaking eerie.
So basically, I think the guy, the journalist or the photographer who had the note, brought the note to Jim Jones and was like, hey, so I got this note. Do you know anything about this? And he's like, well, people are liars. People are lies. People are lying. I don't know what you want me to tell you. People are lying. And then he's just like, okay, well, it seems like some people are unhappy. And Jim Jones looks at him and he's just like, you just need to leave. You need to leave. You need to leave. Please just leave. Just leave us alone. And it was just like, it's just so scary because it's just like he just wants them to leave because he knows his shit's up.
Yeah. It's
so scary.
Why did they bring it, the note to him?
I don't know. I think it was just like, we called your bluff. Like, I don't know. I really don't know. But there was also no way for them to get the people out without Jim knowing. Like, people, you could not leave without his permission.
Right.
He would know. He had armed guards all around. Like, you would be shot if you left.
God.
Yeah. So at that point, you know, after it's brought to Jones' attention and it's kind of like made public to the congressman, Leo Ryan, the congressman, started talking to some members of the community. He was starting to put together a group of people who wanted to be taken back to the States. This was unacceptable in Jones's eyes. These were defectors. They were traitors. They were performing an act of treason. This was not going to go unpunished, basically. I think this moment, he saw this as an attack on his people and his way of life. The following day, the visitors were set to leave the compound with a handful of the defectors. And basically, one of the armed guards pulled out a knife before they had even left the compound, and held it up to the congressman's throat. And I think there was like a scuffle, and he ended up being able to get away from the knife. But they ended up driving away from the compound unharmed. So they headed to the airstrip. Close call. Jim Jones, in a paranoid, drug-induced rage, then gave the orders for a few of his men to drive out to the airstrip and eliminate the visitors and the defectors. No one was to leave alive. No one. So, basically, if their plane had taken off, if they could have fit everyone on that one plane, they would have gotten out unscathed. But because they were deciding to bring defectors with them, they had to call in a second plane. Mm-hmm. And because this congressman was such a good dude, he wasn't like, well, I'm not going to leave without you guys. We'll wait till the second plane gets here, and then we'll take off together. So, just as the second plane was arriving is when the other guys showed up and basically started open firing on everyone there. Five people, including Congressman Leo Ryan and three members of the press, were shot and killed. 11 others were wounded. And then, I mean, like, once the firestorm stopped, they just, like, drove off, thinking that they killed everyone, but they didn't because they're idiots. I don't know. I mean, they, like, literally, this is a little graphic, but they, like, literally went up and fired at them in point blank to make sure they were dead, and most of them ended up living. So. Okay.
Well, I mean, that's good, but, like.
It's really good. They're just really fucking stupid. Yes. They're just so stupid.
I know how this ends, and I'm still shocked.
Yeah. So, after Jones got word that the congressman was dead, he called one final white knight. He got on the sirens. He said, alert, alert. Everyone gathered a pavilion.
You have to know at that moment. It's not a drill. I mean, I'm sure didn't. But
I feel like I would know that it wasn't a drill because, like they didn't have visitors. They don't. And, like, I don't know. You have to hear the gunshots.
Yeah.
You know it's not a drill. And they know that they would have to know that the tensions are building. Not to mention, like, everyone's fucking starving. There's no food to go around. Like, they've come to the end of the line. What else is there? But I don't know. There's some speculation that, like, some people really didn't. They just thought it was another drill, which, like, is really sad. He told his followers that now that the congressman was dead, there was no way that the government would leave them alone, and that soldiers would come for them, force them into concentration camps, and torture them, and that the only way out was a revolutionary suicide. Let's all take a deep breath. Tamara, deep breath. I don't hear you breathing. You're about to burp.
Yep.
Okay. It gets really gross here. So this is where the term drinking the Kool-Aid comes from, even though they technically didn't drink Kool-Aid. They drank Flavor-Aid. It's off-brand.
I can picture it in my head.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm picturing Flavor Ice, which those are like
frozen popsicles?
Yeah, like Otter Pops.
What the fuck is an Otter Pop?
Like the ones that ones in the clear.
Yeah, they're called Otter Pops?
Yeah, that's like the brand name of them, Otter Pops, but.
I didn't know that was a thing.
No one carries brand name. I mean,
Otter Pops?
Yeah. But when I was a kid, they were Flavor Ice. I specifically remember that. That's what I'm picturing.
Riveting.
Go ahead. That was so off topic.
I loved it. It's a little bit of levity.
You know those like cuts you get in the corner of your
yes,
mouth?
That's why I can't eat those.
12 of them in a day.
That's why I can't do them. You know what's nice? Squirt them in a bowl, cut them up with a spoon, eat them that way.
You're unhinged. I just like...
And like I told you the other night, I have the cleanest hands in this place. Don't touch your food.
I cut them like... I round off the corners now for my child.
Yeah, but the...
It works.
I don't know. Oh, my eye just twitched. You've angered me.
I what?
I said, you've angered me. Oh. My eye just twitched.
I thought you said...
What?
I thought thought you said I fingered you, and I was like, excuse me?
Later.
Yeah, it is only, what, 9 o'clock?
Oh, my phone's in my hand. It's 9:10. So,
deep breath.
On November 18th, 1978, Temple members mixed up a cocktail of cyanide, sedatives, and powdered Flavorade. I could not find which flavor.
In my head, it's grape.
I also thought that. Maybe we, like, listened to a different podcast that had the actual flavor in it. Anyways, it's not important. They began dispensing it to the community.
So, it had all this extra stuff in it. Such as? You said before they were, like, drinking wine at these white nights.
Yes. So, at the white nights, he would, like, have them drinking wine. And then he would, like, wait, like, 40 minutes and be like, oh, hey, that bottle was poisoned. You have an hour left to live. And everybody would be like, oh, what? And then after like 10 minutes he would just laugh hysterically and be like, oh, I was just kidding, you passed the test, you're a true follower.
So like now
this but is- like at these, like, that was in the beginning when he started getting real about the white knights and the suicide drills. I mean, they were preparing, they were like probably pulling out the vats and pretending to mix the mixtures. They were like going into full like lockdown mode. Okay, you know?
So this wasn't something completely different where they're like,
no, I think he was like having at the beginning when he was like tinkering with the idea of having this like revolutionary suicide. He talks about that all the time, a revolutionary suicide. At the beginning, I think he was tinkering with, could I get people to do this for me? And then the more and more that people were jumping on board, I think the more they were firming up their plans and the more that he was convincing himself and convincing everybody else that people were after them and they wouldn't live like this and one day it was going to end this way. He just wanted to have a plan in place. To him, it was fucking hurricane preparedness, you know? Get your shelter in place, whatever, shutters. But for them, it was cyanide and Flavor-Aid and sedatives that didn't take effect. Because you had to give them before the cyanide, and they didn't. Oh, so you God. Felt everything. Cyanide's not a peaceful. Anyways. So, here we go. The people killed first were the children. Ugh. 300 of them.
Ugh. So, now they see that these children are dying. They have to know it's real.
And they're screaming bloody murder. They're in pain. Yeah.
Oh my
like,
God.
This is not a quiet. There's a 44-minute death tape where this whole thing is recorded. Where he's on the fucking pulpit blabbering about, quiet, quiet, mother, 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 quiet down your baby, lay down your lives, blah, 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 quiet them down, you're being hysterical, blah, 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 blah. And like people, you can hear the children fucking screaming in the background and their parents are, it's a lot. It's a lot. Yeah. So 200 of those 300 kids were like babies.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Parents and nurses would use syringes to drop the poison into their children's mouths. And then he would have the adults line up for their turns. Anyone who resisted in any way to the poisoning was held down and forced injections into their bodies. People were running to go grab their family members who were like in line ahead of them and were injected in the back because they were like thinking that they were running away. Some people were trying to escape into the forest and were shot trying to get away. A lot. And like the whole time that this is happening, Jones is rambling on and on in his fucking preacher voice. Die with a degree of dignity. Lay down your life with dignity. Don't lay down with tears and agony. I don't care how many screams you hear. I don't care how many anguished cries. Death is a million times more preferable to 10 more days of this life. and he's screaming at mothers to quiet down their babies because they're being fucking hysterical. This motherfucker.
Babies that he's literally murdering.
He's murdering these people. And that's why they don't call it a mass suicide. They call it a massacre because he fucking murdered them. This whole process was recorded. You can go on YouTube and you can listen to the 44. It's not great. I've listened to it a couple times. Like, it's a lot, but I also feel like it's something, I don't know. Like, the first time it was like my morbid curiosity, and then you fucking listen to the whole thing and you're just like, what the fuck did I just do? But then it's just like, God, it's a piece of history, and like, we should be glad that we still have that because we can get a better insight into what the fuck was going on in those last moments because it was such a closed society.
Ugh. Well, you're braver than me. I will not be listening to it. I don't have the
I thought about like health. Playing a clip, but then I was like, no, I'll just do a quote. And that quote gets me choked up every single time. Yeah, in the clip, you can hear people protesting, children screaming. And near the end of the tape, you hear Jim Jones begging people to hurry it up, telling the adults to stop being hysterical and getting the children excited. And then the audio abruptly ends. And it's like pretty crazy. Like, one woman was strong enough. She stood up when this whole thing was happening, and she was just like, I believe that I have the right to decide how I want my life to go, and I believe that these people have the right to decide how they want their lives to go. And she was also, like, fighting for the children. She was just like, you know, whatever, like, I'll take my life, but the children shouldn't have to die. They're innocent. And basically the entire crowd was just like, she's just scared to die. Like, kill her.
It's like, what a crazy idea, being scared to die.
Oh my God, it's just like so insane. And there's like so much more like in the documentary. It's wild. So the following day, the Guyana authorities showed up because they were called after authorities from like the airport were informed that their planes were still on the ground. Nobody had left, and they were just like, something's fucking wrong. Like, we're hearing gunfire, something's wrong at the airfield. So they called the authorities. They showed up expecting a fucking gunfight with Jim Jones leading it, and they walked into, like, silence. And it's a foggy day, and they start walking into the compound, and they start to trip on what they think are logs set by the people to, like, ambush them, trip them up, ambush them. And when the fog clears, they look down, and there's just hundreds and hundreds of bodies all around the compound. And, like, you've probably seen those pictures of the helicopter flyovers.
No, I can't look at the
pictures. It just looks like there's garbage on the ground. Those are people. It's like, it looks like a landfill. And I'm not saying that to be, like, disrespectful. It just, like, you can't when you look at that, you just can't comprehend that those are bodies on the ground. It's insane.
So, are there still, you said some people survived.
Some people survived.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll mention a couple of them, but yeah, some people did survive, including Jim Jones's kids. He had kids. Yeah, I won't talk about them, but I'm sure they want to be left out of their father's legacy.
So these people that were like shot at at the airstrip. Where are they just like?
They were like hiding in ditches. The one that survived, they were like hiding in ditches until people came and found them.
Okay.
Like some of the cameramen and stuff. Yeah. There was this one lady. She was the aide for the politician. She said her leg was blown off. There was a bone sticking out of her arm. And they didn't even think she was going to live. But they just like laid their bodies on top of her. And somehow she made it until help was able to get there. Okay. Like, thank God that they were able to come the next day, because if it hadn't been reported, they wouldn't have been found. It's the jungle.
So the people that came to help, they landed at the same airstrip and like found them.
I'm not 100% sure. It just says that like the Guyana authorities found everything that happened. Okay. So I'm not sure if they flew in or drove in. I'm not 100% sure.
Or they helicoptered just, like, right into, like, Jonestown and not the airstrip. Yeah.
I'm not sure.
This is terrifying.
I should have looked into that.
So, yep. Hundreds of bodies. And when they found Jim Jones, he was like sitting on a fucking throne in the middle of all of them. And it was clear that he hadn't taken the poison himself.
A throne?
Well, he was just like sitting on a fucking chair. Like he was watching everybody fucking die.
Okay. And you said he did take the poison or he didn't?
He did not. They found him with a gunshot wound to the head. So the coroner said that it was like likely a suicide, but at the same time, if he was too much of a pussy to like take the poison.
Oh, are you afraid to die? No, you had someone kill you.
Yeah.
Someone killed you.
Oh, I don't know. It's still like a highly debated thing whether he put the gun to his own head or he had one of his final followers do it for him. Because he's a fucker. He had probably seen how painful the deaths were because not that I'm giving anyone fucking instructions, but sedatives don't take effect immediately. So, like, when you give them at the same time as cyanide, which do you think is gonna work first? That sounds really painful.
Right. Yeah.
So, all told, the final death toll of the Jonestown Massacre is 918 people. 33 members of Jonestown survived that day. And, like, again, that number is, like, super different. I saw, like, numbers way higher than that. I saw 100 members, 33, 80. But what I'm counting, I guess, is the members that were living on that compound that were directly involved with Jonestown. 33 survived. There were also, like, other people in Georgetown who were, like, doing other things. And, like, there were other people in the States who were, like, sending money and stuff like that who were also technically in the People's Temple that, like, survived. Right. But they weren't directly involved in the mass exodus, if you will. So, yeah, 33 members survived that day, either by escaping through the jungle and not being shot, or just the sheer luck of being sent on an errand to the bank that day. I mean, there were a couple that were literally just, like, sent off to go make a deposit, and they missed all the fun.
Oh, my God.
So, one survivor, actually, she was an elderly woman, and she slept through the night, through the white night siren. And she said when she woke up, she was surrounded by carnage, and the dead bodies were everywhere. All the people that she knew and loved, including her sister, just, that's what she woke up to. She slept through it.
I swear to God, if my sister,
if she slept through your death
without me, she's just like, where's my sister? Did she not wake up?
This lady is also just like, I mean, I'm not downplaying her story. It's pretty fucking insane. But she's also like, I can't remember if I fell asleep or passed out.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, I've never been that tired.
Right?
Also, I've watched the videos. That's a really loud siren. I think she was poisoned and maybe fell asleep, like maybe passed out from the poison. I don't really know.
Maybe she was a lucky one that got a sedative.
Just given sedatives. I don't know. But, okay. This is the end of the story. I didn't know how to sum it up because that's like really dark. But all I'm saying is that cults still exist to this day. And I think that's something that we need to remember when we talk about destructive cults like this is that people always think it could never happen to me. I'm too smart for that. How could you be so dumb to do that? But like,
I don't have any money they want.
It happens to people all the fucking time. When powerful people are charismatic and they spend their entire lives manipulating people, they know how to wrap you around their finger. And there's anyone can get stuck in their trap. And I just want everyone to remember, groupthink is very dangerous. Think for yourselves, be an individual. I know it's hard when we're lonely, vulnerable, and desperate for something or someone to follow that'll bring us peace and a hope of prosperity. But these people at the end of the day are experts at selling a dream. And unfortunately, the people of Jonestown and many other fucking cults, they pay with their lives. Don't make the same mistake.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. I worked on that last paragraph for like an hour.
Oh.
How do you fucking wrap that up? I was going to talk about the aftermath, cleaning up the bodies. Nobody wants to hear about that. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It is a lot. I also have a lot of credits that I'm just, I'll put them in the show notes. There's a lot.
So, like, I know you didn't want to talk about his kids, but, like, didn't he send them away?
So, in one documentary, so he had, like five or six or seven kids. Like, he had one that was his own, and then he, like, adopted a whole bunch, and he called them, like, his rainbow kids. Because, you know, I'm super open and blah. But, like, he totally treated them all differently. Anyways, I'm not sure what happened to any of the other ones. I know that his, like, his one white son was, like, I think he was on a basketball team or something, and they were going off to play a game outside of Jonestown, and he had given him permission with the team to go play a game or something like that. I could be totally wrong, but no, that sounds pretty familiar. Sure. Yeah. And I'm not sure about the other kids. Maybe they lived outside of Jonestown directly. Maybe lived in, like, Georgetown. But they only interviewed a couple of the kids in the documentary that I watched. But
my God.
I couldn't imagine. And he looks so much like him. The one that's, like his direct, like, child.
Mm-hmm.
He looks so much like him. That's like, a hard thing.
Yeah, it's sad.
Yeah. Well. Where do we go from here?
It's terrifying. But you successfully distracted me.
Yeah. Horror, misery.
Murder.
I eased our way into the cult scene.
I love a good cult story. Also, I get them all mixed up. So
I don't know why. It's just, like, so fascinating to me how, like, you could just fucking just give away everything. I don't know. I don't consider myself to be religious, but, like, there's so many religions that exist today that are borderline. People just give away everything to, like, follow what makes them feel good. I don't know. It's really scary. Well, do what makes you happy, but don't be destructive about it.
Oh. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for distracting me.
Sorry, everyone.
No, I loved it.
Did you?
You know, and I didn't love that that happened.
Yeah.
I just love how good you did on that story.
Thank you. Thank you. It's very depressing.
I know.
Thank you all for listening. We'll be back, I don't know, maybe next week.
All right.
Maybe 2 weeks. I don't know how often we're releasing episodes.
I think every week.
Cool.
Yeah.
And Tamara's going to tell you a story. Maybe it won't be such a downer.
I have no idea what I'm going to do, so.
It makes me feel better.
Yeah.
Because I chose this story 2 days ago. And then I flip-flopped between this story and another story a couple times. And then I landed back on this story because I had already started the notes.
Well, you did an awesome job.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for listening to Fearful Friends podcast.
Goodbye.
Bye, friends.
Bye now. Bye-bye. They hit the stop button. Bye-bye.
Yep, that's me, huh? Okay, it's off.